Come and take it if you want it. Come and take it if you think you can. Come and take it, but we'll warn you. You'll have to pry it from our cold, dead hands. We want the freedom that God gave us, so you best not cross that line. If you want this gun, you gotta come through us and take it. One shot at a time.
Second Amendment Tuesdays continues here with Attorney Penny Dean here on Bulldog Live on the Pulse, 1-866-823-1077. Penny, as I gave out the phone number before we went to the break, Dave from Ware wants to join the conversation. Dave, good afternoon. You're on with Penny Dean here on Second Amendment Tuesdays.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
First, I'd just like to hit on the issue of the trash bags. Why would you even have to go to the expectation of privacy when there is no continuity or visual continuity of evidence by law enforcement? In other words, person A puts out their garbage, neighbor B sneaks over, puts in half a kilo into his garbage bags, makes an anonymous phone call, the police come, and they haul the guy away because he's got pot in his garbage bags. So obviously, the preponderance is on the prosecution to prove that the officer saw the bag go directly from the individual's house out to the street. And if that is not involved, if the police just stop by a bag on the side of the road in front of a person's house, there's no way that they can make a case that connects the two together.
Unfortunately, they actually can. And let me tell you why. Circumstantial evidence will do it. I don't think it's right. I don't think it's fair. Remember, I believe it was California, Lacey, someone whose husband allegedly murdered her. And I don't think we ever found a body, correct or not? Do you remember that?
You're talking about Lacey Peterson, right?
Lacey Peterson.
Yes.
Did we ever find a body
they
then?
They did, yes.
Oh, they did later. That's
yes.
Right.
As well
they
as
did.
The infant. Yep.
That's exactly right. There have been, though, many, I shouldn't say many cases, but a few cases where a body was never found. Okay.
There was a DuPont case out of Delaware, yes.
Absolutely. And so you say, how can you charge a person when we don't even know if this person's dead because we can't find them, right? And the answer is they do. They do. Now, are you correct in that should they have to see all that? Absolutely. But they don't. The police have argued, look, it's your trash. It's outside your house. We're going to charge you and let the jury decide. And
well,
and you have to pay for a lawyer in the process,
which
they know can be prohibitively expensive.
And you're under felony indictment, which means they take all your firearms away, usually as part of your bail conditions.
Circumstantial evidence is more than just happening upon a garbage bag and opening it up. You need other elements.
Well,
that's what circumstantial evidence is. It's not the simple fact of finding it. There has to be another step along the way for you to build that circumstantial evidence. You see what I'm saying? The act of finding it itself, just like the act of finding a body, you need circumstantial evidence. You need many steps to build that circumstantial evidence to trace it back to the individual. So I don't know how they could have, I'm sure on appeal that case would be overturned.
You want me to tell you what? I don't know. I could pull out a lot of cases, and I don't know that they are. Here's the problem with that. A judge has an opportunity at the end of a trial to set aside a verdict. Judges, in my experience, tend to be very reluctant to set aside jury verdicts. And as you know, in criminal cases, most people elect a jury trial. And so you talk about these steps in between, and the bottom line is that there have been a lot of allegations in a lot of cases, merely the fact that they found something in the trunk of your car or in your backyard, or in some cases they've had people with large plots of ground where they found marijuana growing on their land and they've charged them. And the people swore up and down, look, we don't know who planted it, we don't know who this, we don't know who that was growing on your land. And unfortunately, there's been some convictions in cases like that.
And let me go one step further, if I can interject here, Dave, because we don't have a whole lot of time left. But, you know, the other thing, too, is let's say that the police find this in the situation that you've described, and they go to the homeowner and say, hey, wait a minute, we've got some evidence out here. You threw some pot away. You know, did you do this? And the guy might say, oh, yeah, well, you know, I used to do it or something like that. They bring statements that the person, that the owner, made, and then they bring that before a court, and then he's crucified.
Well, but then they would invoke that they should have been advised of their Miranda rights.
But then again, you need to have a good lawyer, and maybe they can't afford it. You know, this happens.
But here's the other thing. They should have invoked them, but a lot of times people make statements, and sometimes when you're so disgusted, they ask me, did you kill the Pope? And I'm so disgusted with them. Yeah, I killed him at Tuesday. You know.
Right. You're talking about exclamatory statements. But I mean, you know, that unfortunately... an exclamatory statement is not always admissible, and that's the bind that police officers find themselves in when they have to advise somebody of their Miranda rights right at the get-go. So
they usually don't advise them right at the get-go. Here's the problem. That's number one. They wait for a point. But number two, some courts have sadly said that when people say, well, gee, maybe I should talk to a lawyer, or maybe I should get a lawyer, that unless the person unequivocally says, I want a lawyer, that isn't enough. And people in those situations are actually afraid. They're intimidated by the police. They're intimidated by their situation. And so they speak in the, gee, maybe I should have a lawyer. And there's been a lot of courts that say that isn't enough. You have to unequivocally invoke, I want a lawyer now. And the courts have also said, which is really sad, that you can at any point after you've said, I don't want to talk, I want a lawyer, if you initiate conversation with the police, you are per se deemed to have revoked that invocation of a right to counsel.
But you can also stop at any time.
You absolutely can, but as a practical matter, that usually doesn't happen. That absolutely doesn't happen because people, here's the thing that people don't
understand. I've got about 1 minute. It's got to wrap up. Yeah.
Is because cops are allowed to lie. It's called a tactic. They can go into court and say, absolutely, I lied to him. I told him this, that, and the other. And the court say, that's okay. It's a police interview tactic.
Well, that all depends.
Well, it depends on who's lying. If you lie to the cops, you're charged with obstruction of justice.
Hold on. When you're talking about interrogation, that's an entirely different subject because you have to have knowledge of the case beforehand, and it goes right back to never ask a question you don't know the answer to. So if they're already prepared to charge somebody, it always helps to see if the individual will cooperate.
Well, and with that, Dave, I'm sorry, I'm not being rude here, but I am simply out of time. I appreciate your call. Thank you very much. All right. Penny Dean, that's it. We've got to run. What's your phone number? People can get in touch with you.
230-9999.
230-9999 and visit BrianTilton.com. If you missed any portion of this, we'll have the podcast on there later tonight. Thanks, Penny.
Yes, thanks.